Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Opportunity Culture Springs into Action by Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. Odessa High School Algebra 1 teacher Cesar Hernandez looks over the work of 14-year-old Estela Pena Wednesday morning. In his first year as a teacher, Hernandez has the help of Meredith Alvarez, who works as a multi-classroom leader for Algebra 1 classes. Ben Powell, Odessa American. Opportunity Culture, an initiative to get more Ector County ISD students in front of more effective teachers, is moving toward full implementation at 8 campuses. District officials and ECISD board members Donna Smith and Tammy Hawkins got to see the program in action Wednesday at Odessa High School and Edward K. Downing Elementary School. Superintendent Scott Murray said opportunity culture is a way of thinking differently about teacher leadership and about the role of teachers in public education. He said he has used it in a couple of other districts where he worked. We identify our best and brightest who may have had aspirations to become an administrator, but who would really like to remain in the classroom and be a teacher. But they would also like to spread their wings a little bit, be a teacher leader, a teacher coach, curriculum writer, etc. Some of the things teachers would enjoy doing. In order to create those opportunities for teachers, we think differently about the master schedule. A multi-classroom leader is one of the roles as part of opportunity culture. In that particular role, a teacher spends half their day teaching students. They teach more students than they did the prior year, Murray said. For example, if a teacher is used to a class of 30 students, they may get 40 students for their morning classes. In the afternoon, they coach their peers. Another role in opportunity culture is a team reach teacher. Team reach teachers may not be interested in coaching, but they are a great teacher, so they are willing to take on more students in their classes, Murray said. They are paid more to take on more students, but their day would be spent in the classroom. We're also working with UTPB to create another role as a part of opportunity culture, Murray said. These are called resident teachers. We're taking those fourth-year and fifth-year seniors who are doing their student teaching. It's a one-year internship, so we pay those students to come in and they support teachers. Our multi-classroom leaders that take on more kids, we can provide an instructional teaching assistant, pay those assistants a little bit more, then they take on some teaching responsibilities. Deputy Superintendent Stephanie Howard said multi-classroom leaders are accountable for the performance of the adults on their team and all the students on their team. Murray said the district received a $500,000 three-year grant for opportunity culture. Principals have made the program work from their own budgets through vacant positions or adjusting classes. The venture comes through Public Impact in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Its website said its mission is to dramatically improve education, quote, for all students, especially low-income students, students of color, and other students whose needs historically have not been well met. Executive Director of Talent Development Ashley Osborne said the program ensures that more students are engaged and interacting with quality educators. Howard said people on the MCL's team have the benefit of embedded professional learning, quote, so they're learning from one of our best teachers. OHS Principal Mauricio Marquez said opportunity culture gives the high school a chance to recruit teachers from outside the area. The future objective is for all schools to use opportunity culture. We have 8 campuses this year, Howard said. We'll bring 8 on next year. Even with some schools not using it, We're using some strategic staffing models that look very similar without opportunity culture as a framework. But the things that we look at for readiness are, one, student performance. We obviously want to start where we need to make the biggest impact and have great teachers in front of our students, Howard said. Two, we look at talent. What campuses have we had a hard time staffing year in and year out? These are two things that can really impact student performance as well as staffing, she added. Three, a principal who's willing and able to think differently about staffing because it's not the traditional one teacher, a group of students. It's rethinking how you meet the needs of 180, 200, 400 students with a team of people versus everyone has their own, Howard said. Downing principal Marcus Lopez said the program has had a positive impact. He said it helps to be able to tell teachers he's recruiting that they will have someone working with them to coach them. Oftentimes, they're hesitant to come to the boss and say, I need help. With this, it's a lot easier to tell a colleague, hey, I need help, Lopez said. He said he was introduced to opportunity culture in the spring, and planning went from spring through summer. At first, we weren't sure what it was going to look like, but with us doing the phase-in, we were able to adjust as we needed to adjust as more students were showing up in class, Lopez said. Kindergarten teacher Rocky Phillips said the biggest impact she saw this year was that her team hit the ground running. They met on Zoom before teachers reported back to school and have had very few hiccups. Teachers are also coming to her with ideas. Second grade teacher Brenda Bustamantes had some experience with a program similar to Opportunity Culture while teaching in Florida. Bustamantes said her district in Osceola was using the program in 19 schools, and it had a positive impact on test scores and teacher turnover. I'm a big believer. Don't let it go away, Bustamantes said. Fifth grade teacher Gabriella Barry said Opportunity Culture has given her more time to help her team individually, something she felt short of before. Lopez noted that Opportunity Culture also enables him to grow his own instructors. Since we have such a hard time getting teachers here, we here on this campus are growing 6 potential future teachers here, so when an opening happens, I can essentially pick from these 6 here, Lopez said. On the net, publicimpact.com. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 4,415. Ector County negative, 19,974, out of 24,712 tested, with 323 pending, 77 deaths. Recovered, 3,693, active, 645. Midland County, 3,409 confirmed, 74 deaths. Texas, 645,791 confirmed, with 5,372,132 tested. Total Texas deaths, 13,692. U.S. cases, 6,310,663 total confirmed, and 189,147 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. Quick hits. Golf tournament. HEB has scheduled the 2020 Live United Golf Tournament, benefiting United Way of Odessa, from 8 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Friday at Ratliff Ranch Golf Links, 7500 North Grandview Avenue. 18 holes, shotgun start, $150 per golfer, four-man teams, $600. Scramble or beat ball includes green fee, cart, and lunch. Mulligans, $10 each, limit two per player. Two flights are available. Prizes for closest to the pin and longest drive. Tee times will be assigned on a first-come, first-serve basis. Register and pay online at UnitedWayOdessa.org. For more information, call 332-0941. Art Contest. The Odessa American is conducting a contest for artists who can draw a cartoon cover for our football wrap each week for Odessa High and Permian High. One artwork will be selected each week. At the end of the season, a gift card will be awarded to the overall winner. To submit your artwork or for more information, email Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, at OAOA.com. Donations needed. The Humane Society of Odessa, 7012 Mockingbird Lane, is in need of cold weather donations for its current pet residents. What is needed are blankets, new or used, pillows, pillowcases, towels, dish towels or rags, sheets, comforters, dog and cat beds, rugs, carpets, and turf. Donations may be dropped off any time at the shelter or call 432-257-4311 to schedule a large load pickup. Visit www.facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa. From Staff Reports. Preparing a memorial. City of Odessa employee Edward Jumamoy uses a pipe to straighten stakes placed in the ground at Memorial Gardens Park on Wednesday afternoon. The City of Odessa Parks and Recreation Department spent Wednesday morning placing stakes in advance for the 911 memorial flags that will be put out today. This year's event is slightly different than the previous American tribute events put on by Prosperity Bank and Odessa's Parks and Recreation Department. Each September, 3,000 American flags are placed around the pond for nearly 2 weeks. Local police agencies lay wreaths in remembrance of fallen officers. There will not be a public ceremony as in years past, but the Odessa Police Department will place a wreath today during a private ceremony. Steve Patton, Odessa's Parks and Recreations Director, said the annual event is both popular and important as it pays tribute to the lives lost on September 11, 2001, and to area first responders who have died in the line of duty. Patton hopes Odessans will mask up and walk the park to enjoy the flags between today and September 21st. Eli Hartman, Odessa American. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, September 10th, 2020. Page 2, read. Supporting the Blue, Elsa Marie Rodriguez and the kids of Kingdom Church recently made the Odessa Police Department thoughtful cards. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, September 10th, 2020. Page 3, local. ECISD reports 3 new COVID cases. OA News at OAOA.com. Ector County ISD reported 3 new cases Wednesday. The report includes a student from Permian High School, a student from Burleson Elementary, and a student from Ector Middle School. Since this was Ector's first day of school, this student has not been on campus. Local News Roundup. Man charged with recording underneath women's dresses at Walmart. A 34-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly recorded women underneath their dresses while at Walmart. Donald Porter was charged with invasive visual recording, a state jail felony. The reported incident happened around 2:38 p.m. June 6th at the Walmart located at 2450 Loop 338, the Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed. Porter was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on Monday, jail records show. Officers reportedly saw video of Porter recording underneath two women's dresses. Porter was found in the cosmetics department. One of the women stated she would like to press charges, the affidavit stated. The woman stated she didn't know what Porter was doing until officers approached her. The woman stated she didn't give consent for Porter to record or take a picture. Porter had one bond totaling $7,500 and posted bail on Monday. Gardendale teenager dies in single vehicle collision. A Gardendale teenager died in a single vehicle collision north of Midland. The reported collision happened at 2:41 a.m. Sunday on State Highway 158, about 5 miles northwest of Midland, a Texas Department of Public Safety press release stated. Ryan E. Reyes, 18, of Gardendale, was reportedly driving a 2005 GMC Sierra north on State Highway 158. The Sierra left the roadway and struck a utility pole. Reyes was pronounced dead by the medical examiner at the scene, and he was wearing a seatbelt. Odessa man dies in car pedestrian collision. An Odessa man is dead after he was involved in a car pedestrian collision in northeast Odessa. The fatal car pedestrian collision happened at 8:35 p.m. Tuesday near the intersection of 52nd Street and Grandview Avenue, an Odessa Police Department press release stated. Investigation showed a white 2008 Nissan Maxima, which was operated by 29-year-old Joseph Rodriguez of Odessa, was traveling north in the 5100 block of North Grandview Avenue and collided with 64-year-old Antonio Martinez Lujan of Odessa. Lujan reportedly didn't use the crosswalk and attempted to walk east across Grandview Avenue. The 64-year-old Odessan was pronounced deceased on scene, and there were no reports of any other injuries. Next of kin were notified, and the investigation continues. Man charged with pointing a handgun at a gas station clerk after stealing beer. An Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed that a 26-year-old man pointed a handgun at a gas station clerk after he stole a 12-pack of beer. Hector Fuentes was charged with aggravated robbery, a first-degree felony. The reported robbery happened at 11:52 p.m. September 4th at the Quick Track, located at 801 North Golder Avenue, the affidavit stated. The complainant, identified as Michael Ponce, reportedly told officers that a white 2016 Ram 2500 with black rims that was lifted pulled into the gas pumps. The complainant, identified as Michael Ponce, reportedly told officers that a white 2016 Ram 2500 with black rims that was lifted pulled into the gas pumps. A man, later identified as Fuentes, wearing a black shirt and red hat, walked into the station and went toward the coolers where the alcohol is. Fuentes grabbed a 12-pack of Corona, which was valued at $15.99, and walked toward the entrance. Fuentes walked past all points of sale without making an attempt to pay for the beer and got into his truck, the affidavit stated. Ponce stated he ran after him to get the license plate of the truck. Fuentes reportedly began to take off, and Ponce shouted at him, "You have to go back inside and pay for that." Ponce stated that Fuentes responded with, "What you say," and pointed a black handgun at him and took off. Through the investigation, officers were able to match facial similarities between a booking photo of the registered owner of the vehicle and the camera footage at the gas station and identified the man as Fuentes, the affidavit stated. Dispatch reportedly advised at 12:37 a.m. September 5th that ECISD police saw the vehicle on Zanetta Avenue. Officers made their way to Zanetta Avenue and saw the vehicle matching the description and license plate was in the 1200 block of Zanetta Avenue. While officers were waiting for assisting officers to arrive, they saw the headlights illuminate from the vehicle and the passenger side door open, the affidavit stated. Officers made their way to the vehicle and saw Fuentes wearing everything that was seen on the camera footage and began to walk away from the pickup. In plain view, the handle to a black FN Herstal Belgium caliber 5.7x28 was reportedly seen under the center console. The 12-pack of Corona was also seen in the front right passenger feet area. Fuentes was read his Miranda rights, and he stated he would answer questions, the affidavit stated. Officers asked Fuentes about the robbery, and he denied having any involvement. Fuentes stated he had been at his cousin's house. Fuentes was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He had one bond totaling $50,000 and posted bail on September 5th, jail records show. OA News at OAOA.com. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, September 10th, 2020, local and state. OC offering medical lab assistant program by Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. Through its continuing education department, Odessa College is now offering a medical laboratory assistant program. The program is the brainchild of Heather Patton, Continuing Education Health Careers Director. It is a 9-month certificate program and costs $4,500. There are scholarships and payment plans available. It is in response to the shortages being experienced by our clinical labs and hospitals throughout the nation, Patton said. Through this program, I have created a career ladder for our students. The students here will start out as a phlebotomist, or they work in the community as a phlebotomist. That's the only prerequisite for this program. Then they will enter the medical laboratory assistant program in order to be able to work in a laboratory. If you work in a clinical laboratory, you have to meet certain requirements through national regulatory agencies. Medical technicians have associate degrees, and medical technologists have bachelor's degrees. Medical technologists are able to perform all laboratory testing, which includes hematology, chemistry, blood banking, microbiology, mycology, urinalysis, and other tests, Patton added. They're really cool. They aid in the diagnosis of cancer, diabetes, autoimmune diseases, heart disease, and many others, she said. Patton said the reason she pushed so hard for this program is that people don't understand who conducts their tests, specifically with regard to COVID-19. They think it's doctors and nurses, but those aren't the people who are doing it. It's the laboratory professionals that are behind the scenes. They're the ones who are processing the tests. They are the ones who are doing all the controls, the quality controls, making sure everything is accurate, making sure the testing is in compliance and resulting it out, she said. They are the ones who are working behind the scenes in order to get all these results out to the public. Over the years, Patton said the number of schools graduating medical laboratory assistants has decreased. The age of the workforce also has increased, and the reduced visibility has created issues as well. There are also limited schools that are available in the country that offer this particular program. So what I've done is a program in order to meet this need and demand, Patton said. If they met the minimum requirement of being a phlebotomist, they can go into this program and make it a stepping stone into getting their associate or bachelor's degree in the laboratory setting. They would not have the same ability as a technician or a technologist, but they would have the ability to help that person out with setting up plates, loading the analyzer, taking out the biohazard, making slides. They are the person who is doing the hands work while the technologist is using their brain and analyzing what's going on with the instruments and what are these results really telling me about the state of this patient, Patton said. Patton said she has worked in laboratories for 15 years, so I knew the need for medical laboratory assistance. If more people knew about this program, there would be, I believe, people from other areas that would be interested in it, especially laboratories who are short-staffed, rural laboratories, so I'm hoping that this will be that launching point to help them, Patton said. She added that she hopes the program is as successful as she thinks it could be. I have a real passion for making sure that people who want to get an education have a launching point. I want to make sure that they have a starting point and that we can help them get to where they want to be. There are some people who want to be in healthcare. They don't know what it is, and we can help them identify that, and that way they're able to support their families, have health insurance, have a steady job. It's very critical in this time, Patton said. On the net, tinyul.com/YDARDMDT. Bilingual program making strides. OA News at OAOA.com. The number of bilingual and English as a second language students continues to grow in Ector County ISD, as do the languages spoken. Executive Director of Bilingual and ESL Education, Betsabe Salcido, presented the information to the Board of Trustees during a Tuesday workshop. Board members Carol Gregg and Nelson Minyard were absent due to illness. Salcido said there were 5,089 English learners in 2017, and in 2020 there are 6,159. The 2020 count is still in progress for identification of students, pre-kindergarten and new students, the presentation showed. She noted that another 600 students could be added. There are 24 languages spoken in ECISD, with English, Spanish, and Vietnamese in the top three. Salcido said the district is offering dual language one way. Under this model, Salcido said, our students have the opportunity to receive instruction 50% of the time in Spanish and 50% in English. It goes pre-K through fifth grade, so right now the elementary, we start at pre-K through first grade. Every single year, we're going to be adding another grade level, and so eventually our late exit transitional model will be phased out. So at the elementaries, we will only have dual language one way. A review of data shows students in the bilingual ESL programs improving academic performance in most areas of 3rd through 8th grade STAR tests and end-of-course exams. The gaps between ECISD's English language learners and the general student population has closed significantly over the last several years, the board recap said. A 7th grade dual language experience is planned for next year. Salcido said Cameron Dual Language Magnet goes up to 6th grade. Program models include transitional late exit bilingual model, elementary, dual language one-way model, elementary, dual language two-way model, elementary, ESL content-based and ESL pullout, elementary, and ESL pullout, secondary. She said the program is now at stage two, when it had been as low as stage four and was under scrutiny by the Texas Education Agency. Our bilingual program is available at 22 of the elementary campuses and two early childhood campuses, so 24 total, Salcido said. In other business, Position 4 board member Chris Stanley was sworn in by 244th District Court Judge James Rush. Stanley replaces Doyle Woodall, who resigned in June following backlash over Facebook posts that some found offensive. Superintendent Scott Murray said the phase-in process of opening school ended Tuesday. About 50% of families have opted for virtual and 50% for face-to-face or hybrid instruction. Next week, he said, families have their first opportunity to change their minds. A little over 1,000 have changed their minds as of Tuesday, and families will have the same chance at the end of every grading period. The board also reviewed success indicators in the strategic plan and several local policy update revisions. Trustees and Murray discussed the yearly measures the district will use to ensure the board's goals are being met. In recent years, the Board of Trustees developed 3 specific goals to be achieved by the end of the 2023-24 school year, those being the percentage of students achieving or exceeding meets standard on state assessments will increase from 32% to 60% by May 2024 across all tested content areas. The percentage of all students in kindergarten through third grade reading at or above grade level will increase from 60% to 85% by May 2024. The percentage of high school graduates considered college, career, or military ready will increase from 11% to 34% by May 2024. Through the strategic planning process, district leaders identified 14 indicators of success. If done well, this will move student achievement toward fulfillment of those board goals. As Murray said, he compared the 14 indicators to dominoes. He said if they are lined up correctly, as each moves, it influences and moves the others, the board recap said. Trustees spoke of reviewing their goals and potentially updating them in light of the initiatives supporting the strategic plan. Board members will receive quarterly updates on the work being done to improve performance and ultimately achieve the goals they have established. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, September 10th, 2020. Opinion. National View. Give money to babies to unlock the gates of opportunity. The Point. New Jersey's Baby Bonds plan is a potentially transformative effort in the fight against inequality. Everyone born in Britain between September 1st, 2002 and January 2nd, 2011 received a baby present from the government, a savings account that could not be tapped until the child turned 18 with an initial balance of between 250 and 1,000 pounds, depending on the family's income. This month, the oldest recipients started turning 18 and gained access to that money. Some of the accounts hold more than 5,000 pounds, $6,480. As any 18-year-old can tell you, money is the best of all possible high school graduation presents. It unlocks the gates of opportunity. And the British program gave money to children from families that had little of their own. The gifts were intended to chip away at the inequalities of wealth and the resulting inequalities of opportunity that weigh on developed nations. Philip Murphy, the governor of New Jersey, proposed last month to create a similar program for children in his state, which would be the first such program in the United States. The Baby Bonds program would create a $1,000 savings account for each child born into a New Jersey household with an annual income below about $131,000. The money eventually could be put toward school tuition, a down payment on a house, or starting a business. Mr. Murphy's office estimates roughly 3/4 of the state's newborns would be eligible, around 72,000 children next year. Black people are particularly disadvantaged by inequalities of wealth and opportunity in the United States, inequalities that are substantially a result of past and present racism. Black households with children have on average about 1 penny in wealth for every dollar held by white households with children, according to a recent analysis by the sociologists Christine Percheski and Christina Gibson Davis. That wealth gap has increased in recent decades, and strikingly, the gap between black and white households with children is wider than the overall wealth gap for black and white households. The Baby Bonds program, which builds on the work of the economists Derek Hamilton and William Darity Jr., is an elegant approach to reducing those racial gaps. Broader programs command broader support. The disproportionate need among black children would be reflected in the distribution of the benefits. Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey has introduced federal legislation to create a national program under which children would receive a $1,000 present at birth, plus annual contributions of up to $2,000 a year based on family income. We have previously endorsed Mr. Booker's plan, which deals in numbers large enough to make a real difference. Some children would get more than $40,000 when they turned 18. Mr. Murphy is proposing to start small. New Jersey would give newborns a one-time payment of $1,000 with no commitment of more, although he has suggested that he'd like to do more. The New Jersey nest eggs wouldn't mature into game-changing sums without additional state contributions. The average cost of a year of community college in New Jersey is $6,125. The median home price last year topped $300,000, but it's much easier for a federal program to provide the big bucks. The real value of the New Jersey program may be in the work of hammering out the details and the trial and error of implementation, which can provide lessons for creating a larger initiative. One key question is how to invest the money. The magic of compound interest, put some money in a pot and watch it grow, isn't so magical these days. At current rates, $1,000 invested in 30-year treasuries for 18 years would amount to less than $1,500. Mr. Murphy's proposal has drawn fire from Republican legislators who argue that New Jersey cannot afford the roughly $80 million annual price tag. They note that Mr. Murphy is proposing sharp spending cuts, tax increases, and borrowing to deal with the fiscal effects of the coronavirus pandemic, which has hit New Jersey harder than any other state. Some conservatives also warn that children would be spoiled by the state gifts, a concern that oddly has not led those critics to demand the revival of estate taxation. In Britain, the Conservative Party phased out the government's gifts after taking power in 2010, offering similar arguments. The government didn't have enough money, the children were better off without it. A version of the savings accounts still exists as tax-advantaged vehicles for rich people to save their own money and pass it along to their children. The coronavirus crisis instead should be seen as the strongest argument for baby bonds. It has exposed and exacerbated the inequities of life and death in New Jersey and the rest of the nation. Job losses are concentrated among lower-income workers. Their families are struggling to avoid eviction. Their children are struggling to connect to virtual schools. All the while, stock prices keep on rising. The urgency of the need for government action to check inequality has never been greater. As Mr. Murphy said in introducing the baby bond proposal, you can't ignore tomorrow. Every new birth is a chance to begin remaking the nation's future to help every child realize his or her potential. Without action now, future inequalities will only yawn wider. The New York Times. Hello, this is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Thursday, September 10th, 2020, Obituaries and Death Notices. Obituaries. Patsy Laverne Etheridge, Odessa. Born in Temple, Texas, to Marie Keller Ellis and Lee Alexander Ellis, Laverne graduated from Temple High School and a local business school. In March 1954, Laverne married the love of her life, Melvin Tiny Etheridge, at the First Baptist Church in Temple. The couple later moved to Odessa, where they made their home and raised three daughters, Gail, Leanne, and Diane. Laverne is survived by her husband, Tiny, daughter Gail Etheridge and Danny Woods, grandson Tommy Miller, his wife Amanda, and great-grandchildren Jake and Allie Miller of Fort Worth, and sisters Shirley Lundgren of Austin, Texas, and Raydeen Popelka of Coppell, Texas. Other survivors include brothers Buddy Redden, Wayne and Delane Redden, and many nieces and nephews. Laverne was preceded in death by daughters Leanne Miller, 2013, and Diane Etheridge, 1967, her beloved mother and father-in-laws, Ed and Ethel Etheridge. Our family would be honored by the blessing of a donation in her memory to Odessa Meals on Wheels, 1314 East 5th Street, Odessa, Texas, 79761, or Heart to Heart Hospice, 4214 Andrews Highway, Suite 307, Midland, Texas, 79703. A visitation will be held Thursday, September 10th, 2020, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Frank Wilson Funeral Directors in Odessa, Texas. A graveside service will be held on Friday, September 11th, 2020, at 1 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Thurman Wayne Ray, Port Arthur, Texas. Thurman Wayne Ray went home to rest in the arms of his Heavenly Father on the evening of September 5th, 2020. He married Victoria Mae Eggenberg on July 15th, 1950, in Electra, Texas. In 2012, after the death of his beloved wife, Victoria, he moved to Bridge City, Texas, to be closer to his family in the later years of his life. He is survived by his sons, Randy Wayne Ray and wife Kelly of Granger, Indiana, Terry Paul Ray and wife Patricia of Kilgore, Texas, daughter Cindy Ray Harvey and husband Tom of Bridge City, Texas, sister-in-law Amelia Ray of Snyder, Texas, niece Kayann Fletcher Curtis of Snyder, Texas, nephew Greg Ray Tracy of Fort Worth, Texas. He is also survived by seven grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his wife of 61 years, Victoria Mae Eggenberg, mother Lily Nell Strange, father Jack Thurman Ray, stepmother Mary Ellen Brock Ray, and brothers Johnny Lee Ray and Donald Jean Ray. A graveside service will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, September 12th, 2020, at Old Electra Cemetery in Electra, Texas. Officiating will be Reverend Joe Coombs. Visitation will be held prior to the service from 12:30 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. at Auld's Funeral Home in Electra. The family would like to thank the staff at Sabine Place Assisted Living Facility in Orange, Texas, and Bonvie Nursing Home in Port Arthur, Texas, for the care they provided for Wayne these last few years of his life, and a special thanks to caregivers Deborah Bowman, Annette Waters, Brenda Ardian, and Lisa Rideau. Carl Allen Rice, Sr., McCamey. A longtime resident of McCamey, Carl Rice, 66, died Friday, August 14th, from injuries sustained in an automobile accident on Highway 385, south of Crane. A native of Pennsylvania, Rice was a longtime employee of Cooper Construction. Born on November 24th, 1953, in Susquehanna, Pennsylvania, he graduated from Susquehanna Community School. He later married a young woman named Bonnie, whom he met in Susquehanna. The couple moved to McCamey in 1982, and Rice started employment on March 1st with Cooper Construction as a project foreman on a McKamey School addition. Rice was predeceased by Lawrence and Betty Rice. Survivors include his wife, Bonnie, his son, Carl Rice Jr., and partner, Michelle, brothers-in-law, Wayne Heath and Terry Heath, a sister-in-law, Tammy, a niece, Sarah, and nephews, Brett, Brian, Adam, Matt, and Tyler, and many great friends. As Carl would say, you know who you are. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, September 12, 2020, at Christ Church Anglican, 5501 North Midkiff Road, Midland, Texas, with Father Jonathan Hartzer officiating. The family suggests making a donation to the charity of your choice in lieu of flowers. Arrangements were handled by Schaefer Nichols Funeral Homes and Chapel of Crane and McKamey. Death notices. Maria Celestina Garcia Cazares, as spelled C-A-Z-A-R-E-S. Odessa, Maria Celestina Garcia Cazares, 87, of Odessa, died Saturday, September 5th, 2020, in Odessa. Chapel service will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday, September 10th, 2020, at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Father Joseph Ecker is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Maria Elena Martinez Corrales, Odessa. Maria Elena Martinez Corrales, 73, died Tuesday, September 8, 2020, in Odessa, Texas. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa, Texas. Sherry Y. Ferris, Odessa. Sherry Y. Ferris, 59, of Odessa, Texas, died Saturday, August 29, 2020, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for Friday at 1 p.m., September 11, 2020, at Rose of Sharon Baptist Church. Burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section. Reverends Windsor Archie and Darren Willis are officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa, Texas. Velma Maureen Chavers Roach, Odessa. Velma Maureen Chavers Roach, 84, died Tuesday, September 8, 2020, in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Don't skip the shots, frozen shoulder. Dear Dr. Roach, I have been diagnosed with frozen shoulder after an x-ray by an orthopedic doctor. He sent me to physical therapy, but this is the slowest recovery and the most agonizing pain. No over-the-counter products help, and I do not want surgery. He offered a shot for the pain. I declined. I could go back for it, but I do not want a temporary solution. I'm told this could last 1 to 3 years. Any suggestions? D.E. Answer. A frozen shoulder, also called adhesive capsulitis, is a painful loss of motion of one of the joints in the shoulder, the glenohumeral joint, between the shoulder blade and arm bone. It can come on by itself, but often is the result of not treating an injury, such as a rotator cuff syndrome, early and aggressively. Without treatment, healing could take 1 to 3 years you were warned about. Physical therapy is crucial for treatment. However, a joint injection is an effective supplementary treatment that you should reconsider. Studies have shown that one or more injections can speed up recovery. It does only provide temporary relief, but my experience is that physical therapy is more effective when people are in less pain and greater movement because of the injection. The injection can be repeated if necessary. I have had patients get so much relief with the injection that they never go to physical therapy. That's a mistake. The PT is the definitive treatment. Without PT, the benefit from the shot goes away and the symptoms return. Orthopedic surgeons, rheumatologists, and regular doctors, like family physicians, often give these injections. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
Dear Abby, the headline reads, "Man who threatens suicide demands his guns be returned." Dear Abby, my friend and I have been friends with another couple for more than 50 years. The four of us have shared lots of good times together. After recent open-heart surgery, the husband became very depressed and talked to his wife about ending it all. She asked me to take the few handguns, all legal, they had in their home to be safe. I didn't feel I could say no. I'm not interested in guns, but it seemed a simple request. So she snuck them out to me during our last visit. When the husband discovered what his wife had done, she told him about my role in it. He now demands I return his guns and says he no longer wants anything to do with me. His wife wants me to hold on to them for now. What should I do? Torn over this. Dear Torn, from what I have been told, depression after heart surgery is not unusual. Hang on to the guns and urge the wife to report her husband's threat to harm himself to his doctors and let them guide her. She should call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 800-273-8255. Someone who has talked about suicide should not have easy access to the means to do it. Dear Abby, since this coronavirus pandemic started, I have seen lots of articles stressing the importance of staying connected to elderly family members, friends, and those living alone. My husband and I have each other, so we are sheltering in place. Although we have 8 grandkids, we all live within 50 miles. We haven't heard a word from any of them, whether via phone, email, or text, all of which we do. How bad is that? Disconnected in California. Dear Disconnected, if you have reached out to your grandchildren and been ignored, shame on them. If you haven't, it's time you did. Sometimes young people become so engrossed in their daily lives, they forget about anything else. But that's what parents are for. So remind them that reaching out to someone who needs a kind word or an errand run during a pandemic can be rewarding not only for the receiver, but also for the giver. Parents should remind them to take 5 minutes occasionally to text Grandma. Dear Abby, I started and completed a college fund for my 2 daughters. Only one of them used it. The other joined the military and used the GI Bill for college instead of the money from the college fund, $10,000. Am I obligated to give her that money? I did pull it out of the fund and have it in a certificate. I figure when she buys a house, I'll give it to her then. Wondering in Florida. Dear Wondering, check with the bank to make sure there won't be a problem if the college fund money isn't used for your daughter's education. If you can apply it elsewhere in a way that will benefit her, and part of a down payment on a house would definitely qualify, I think it would be wonderful. But check first.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Virgo and a moon in Gemini. Happy birthday for Thursday, September 10, 2020. Capable, reliable, and always searching for something more profound, that wild and precious life to be found. You succeed this year by building a supportive network. Although deeply private, you will express yourself in wondrous ways. If single, you will find a highly unusual mate this year. If attached, your partner is the focus of attention while you work behind the scenes. Your quiet, happy time together continues. Taurus adores you. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. You will be changed by external events involving other people today. It's a time of adjustments. Identify newly developing conditions. An old problem is solved, and you gain a deep understanding of a new subject or task. Tonight, you discover new mental potentials. Taurus, April 20 through May 20, 4 stars. Money could come from a different source, as an established source of income changes. Your attitude about financial matters, especially material possessions and investments, undergoes a profound shift. It's a lucky day to select a new car or to pick up travel tickets. Tonight, relax. Gemini, May 21 through June 20, 5 stars. Events will intrigue you. Today allows you to work on sensitive points and find solutions. End of the day, opportunities arise that open doors to a better life. Pursue them. You're especially visible to higher-ups. Tonight, make important calls and purchase books. Cancer, June 21 through July 22, 3 stars. You will seek stability and security. Today brings extra commuter travel and a restlessness. It might be better to stay at home if possible. Stress can be high, so take time to relax. Don't let confrontations develop. Tonight, your support brightens the lives of others. Leo, July 23 through August 22, 4 stars. Listen carefully and use caution making promises today. Let others see your point of view. Humor and goodwill brighten intimate ties. Creative ideas, art and music, as well as thoughts of travel bring immense pleasure. Tonight, the needs of children are emphasized. Virgo, August 23 through September 22, 3 stars. Your ambitions and expectations about work are high, and a competitive spirit builds. Be patient and thoughtful, as you naturally are. Soon your value will be more widely recognized. Don't take it personally if a familiar group breaks up. Tonight, a soothing bath. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. You are frequently enthused about exploring new places and learning other languages, which has been quite a challenge through this pandemic. Today allows you to indulge this preference or to make plans for a future odyssey. Tonight, you will express yourself admirably. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21, 3 stars. Keep perspective and don't push yourself too hard today. Controversy surrounds you. Make constructive efforts at improvement, but use care if too much anger is building around you or within you. Tonight, your loved ones are going through a catharsis. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21, 3 stars. Today can impact health conditions and the lives of those near you. Try to avoid contact with those who suffer from an illness. If caring for those who are sick, take frequent breaks so the stress doesn't wear you down. Tonight, date night, a relief. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19, 3 stars. A clean, orderly environment adds to your well-being. Today marks a time of healing and increasing strength. Be careful of over-treating any maladies or mixing different medicines, and all will be well. Tonight, be patient with less-than-perfect domestic conditions. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18, 5 stars. Today helps you create good fortune with positive actions and confidence. You accomplish much and are an inspiration to others. It's a marvelous time for planning a remote party or travel to a distant land. Tonight, express your zest for life. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Relationships are in a state of flux. Be tolerant and patient with partners. Postpone decisions about financial matters until next week. A job with an attractive benefits package will appeal to you and relieve worries about the future. Tonight, discuss it with a loved one. Born today, poet Mary Oliver, 1935, actor Colin Firth, 1960, cartoonist Alison Bechdel, 1960.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.